Hello, everyone. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where one writer talks to another writer about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you most want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you most want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And we are funded by the one and only Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen all the way to publication since 1955. You can learn more about the PNWA, become a member, and perhaps look into their fabulous yearly Summer Writers Conference at pnwa.org. So, as some of you may know, I've recently published a book called Write Within Yourself, An Author's Companion. And it's a little collection of essays and stories about creativity and writing and just life in general. And I wanted to talk today about this concept of writing within ourselves. And while I have conducted numerous interviews with myself in my imagination, and I have to say I'm a fabulous guest, but I have found in reality, it is best to let someone else do the interviewing. And on that note, I had decided to ask onto the show my good friend and fellow author, novelist, teacher, poet, and all-around good guy, Terry Persson, to take on this weighty role. Terry, welcome to Author to Author.
Thank you very much. I'm glad to be here. I like the idea of putting the shoe on the other foot there.
It's about time, isn't it? It's high time.
It is. It's
well, it's not easy to hand over control, but I will. I will do it. But before I do, tell us, as I mentioned, you're an author yourself. You've got you've got a lot of books out, poem collections, novels. I know recently you had Cathedral of Dreams, a wonderful science fiction novel, and Sweet Song, a literary novel. But you've also got a new book out, a kind of a new venture for you. What is that book?
Yeah, I thought about this. I have two that are really important to me right now. One is called Double Sight, which is a fantasy about shapeshifters, and it's the first in a series. And I've already written three out of the series, one, two, and four, so I've skipped number three for some reason. And the other book is called And Now This, which is a book of poems.
Excellent.
And, poetry doesn't get enough space in people's minds, I think, and now that it's National Poetry Month, it's probably good that I mention that.
Excellent. And you see, I am so tempted to begin talking to you and asking you all these questions about your book, just you mentioning them. But I'm going to silence myself, my interviewer's instinct, and I'm going to instead hand it over to you. So, Terry,
great.
The show is yours.
Perfect. Well, Bill, I've gone through your essays, as you know, because I've read your book, and there are always these repeating things that show up that I'd like to get more information on. And
sure.
One of them, and I think is really the important one, is what you started out with almost, and that is that this is a companion as opposed to a guide.
Correct.
What is the difference between the two for you?
Well, as I stated in the sort of opening of the book, a guide will tell you where to go. And we do need guides sometimes to show us, for instance, what algebra is. There's no way you're really going to know probably what algebra is without a guide, unless you're a math genius. And there are times in our lives where we do seek out guides to tell us where to go. But a companion knows that in your heart you know where to go, but can hopefully remind you of that place within you where that knowledge of where to go resides. A good companion reminds you of your strength. A good companion reminds you of your value. And that's what I wanted the book to be, something to remind everyone, whether you're a writer or not, just a creative person, but to remind you that you have everything you need, but that you can forget, but that forgetting about something does not mean it doesn't exist. Forgetting that you have something valuable to say to the world does not mean you have nothing valuable to say to the world. And a good companion just reminds you of your value, reminds you that you know where you want to go. And so that to me is the difference.
So it's kind of like a support system.
Yeah,
as you
because
read through it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Because you know, growing, I mean, this is my take on learning to write. I was never interested in anybody teaching me how to write. I was very, in fact, wary of people who wanted to teach me sort of the mechanics of writing. And I say that knowing full well that many people have had fantastic teachers who have done just that. But I very much wanted to go it alone in that regards, and I did. And that's how I've taught myself almost everything. But I was desperate for someone to remind me why I write, to remind me where to keep my attention so that I don't become lost in fear and doubt and self-consciousness and vanity, all the things that absolutely obstruct that lovely creative process. And so I thought, well, let me write some essays that can remind you what it feels like when you're creating from within yourself, from your very best place, because that's what I would want as a reader.
Now, that makes a lot of sense. And so along those same lines, you talk also about how you believe that writing isn't necessarily hard. And you kind of brought that up, that you think it's already in within you. So,
yes.
So if it's not that hard, what's stopping people from doing this? What is the roadblock, if you will?
You know, there's a lot of them. I actually teach a class or a kind of a workshop called The Myth That Writing is Hard. And I think there's three main reasons we think writing is hard. The first is you're not a writer, meaning writing is not actually your favorite means of communication. You just want to be a writer, but you're not someone who actually loves to write. So you do have to love to write to write. And if you don't love to write,
so there's that difference between what you think looks like and feels like versus actually doing the work.
Yeah, because if you want to write, Terry, you must enjoy the experience of sitting in the chair and thinking in words and putting them on the page. That experience alone has to be enough on some level. It has to begin enough, and if it's not, eventually it will get unpleasant. Eventually someone will say no to your story and you'll think, and it will seem impossible. So the first thing is you've got to want to write. You have to want to write. And if you don't, it's going to be hard. The second is you are writing someone else's book. So you're not writing the book you want to write. You're writing the book you think you're supposed to write or the way you're supposed to write it. You know, I have numerous examples of people I've interviewed where they've said, I tried writing this kind of book. I tried writing this kind of book. And then I finally said, screw it. Lev Grossman being the perfect example, who wrote The Magicians, that YA novelist who wrote The Magicians, finally said, I don't want to write about pretend monsters or psychological monsters. I want to write about real monsters. And so he did, and he had tremendous success because he allowed himself to write the book he wanted to write, not the book that he thought he was supposed to write, because his parents were big deal literary people and didn't want to write literature in that fashion. So that's the other reason.
This kind of breaks down the whole idea that they tell you sometimes to look to see what's selling, and then try to write one of those, right?
Yeah, right. isn't that a fool's errand, huh? First of all, what selling is going to change, and B, you know, people. I'm sure you've had this, Terry. You tell someone who's maybe not in the world of publishing or not a writer. You say, oh yeah, I write, and they go, oh, you know what you should do? You should write like one of those books like Lee Childs writes, and then you make all your money, and then you can write the books that you want to write. You ever gotten before?
Oh yes. Well, right. You know, the whole thing about romance sells better than anything else. So,
right. So
you need
write
to write
romance.
Some romance.
Yeah, that's easy enough, right? Well, it's
not. Yeah, that's right. It sounds easy.
No, it's not. In fact, and I love it, people say that about children's books. Well, there's 32 pages. There's maybe only 400 words. How hard could that be? But if you talk to children's books writers, it's like writing a poem. It's just as challenging. It requires just as much craft. So, yeah, it's a complete fool's errand to try to write a book. And by the way, there have been some fantastically successful novels that never should have. I mean, my favorite example being Jonathan Livingston Seagull by Richard Bach. That book is weird. It's short. It's about a talking seagull, and it sold 44 million copies. So there is no – even though – romance sells best. There's no one formula. So you should write the book you want to write. And if you don't, it will be hard. And I know that for sure. I've tried. God knows I've tried. And if you're not writing the book you want to write, it will be hard. The third reason is you're not writing. You're sitting at the desk going, geez, I wonder if this will be any good. Or, God, the last book didn't sell. I wonder if this one will. Or, I wonder what my agent will. You'll be thinking about everything except the one thing you're supposed to be thinking, which is, what do I want to say and how do I say it? You're thinking about all the things that the author should think about, like, where do I go to submit it? How will I sell it? And all those sort of authory business thoughts instead of the work of the writer, which is only translating the thoughts in your head to words on the page. And if you're doing anything else, you're not writing. And if you try to write through the thoughts of fear, write through the thoughts of anxiety, write through the argument with your wife, write through the arguments with your children, whatever, or with the president or whoever you're upset with at that moment, if you try to write through that stuff, it will be very hard. It will be very hard because you'll almost like trying to listen to one song while static plays, you know, in the other ear. But the main reason, Terry, the main reason writing is hard is it requires our full attention. You can't.
Oh, I like
you can't,
that. Yeah.
It requires our full attention. And it's not easy. Things that are easy, like boiling pasta, don't require our full attention. But writing does. And most of us are not used to giving life our full attention. We are reflecting on the past and still suffering from the wounds or worrying about the future. I do this all the time. But when you give life your full attention, which you have to do with writing, that's when it can come, and it will come easy. But we are so unaccustomed to giving life our full attention, and I say we because I know it is a human habit, that it seems hard because we can't believe we have to give it our full attention, but we do. But that's the gift, Terry, because you and I, we are our full attention. That's us. You meet yourself in that moment in a way. So that's why it's a myth that it's hard. And if you think it's hard, when it is hard and you believe that myth, you won't challenge that thought and say, why is it hard right now? Am I trying to write a book that isn't mine? Am I trying to write it in a way that isn't mine? Am I thinking about stuff other than writing? If you believe the myth, you won't challenge those thoughts. So, yes.
Yeah, you're right. Perfect. So that's one of the things that you would recommend to people, that they sit down and they go through these four pieces and say, if you're not working, look at these things and figure out which one's in your way.
What do you do? Like, what is going on at the desk? Look what's happening at the desk. What are you thinking about right now? What are you thinking about? You know, look at your thoughts if they're not the question, what do I want to say and how do I say it? Because there's nothing else that's relevant to the writing experience. And believe me, I have had all kinds of horrendous things going through my head as I've tried to write. And, it, you know, and not even questioning. You know, the inner critic, that's another word for this sort of thing. The inner critic, they're questioning everything you're doing. But you have to learn to hear that voice. You have to learn to know that you're actually listening to the inner critic to silence him or her, or else you won't even recognize he or she is speaking to you.
That's right.
Yeah.
At one point you say that knowing something is not the same as acting on it.
And do
so, I? Yep, that kind of enters into this as well. Yeah. You know, I remember, do you know Hugh Prather?
I don't.
Hugh Prather, I quote him often. He has a thing that he says that I pinned up on my desk when I was writing, and it says, if you say you want to write and you don't write, then you don't want to write.
Correct. Correct.
And it's just what you're saying. If you keep saying, I need to do this or I need to do that, and you can't get it done, where you can't sit down and focus on it. I mean, I've done the same thing as you have. I've tried writing other things. If I sit down to try to write a mystery, it just doesn't work for me. I just don't write mysteries. And I'll sit there and not be able to find anything.
That's right. And there's, I think that there is, to be able to write something, you have to know why it is of value. You have to value the experience that it offers. So if you love romance, there has to be a part of you that craves the experience the romance novel gives so that you can give it too. And so even though intellectually I'm a kind of skilled enough writer at this point to theoretically write anything, you know, I know how to write, I know how to craft characters and scenes. If I don't know why someone loves mystery or why someone loves suspense, I could only give a kind of shadow of it. No matter how skilled I am, I couldn't really do it. And I would probably lose interest anyway, but even if I stuck it out and finished the thing, it would lack that depth of spark that the person who actually knows why a suspense novel is valuable can offer. So I can write these essays because I know, to me, I know why I would value them, why I would read them. And so I can bring a level to them, perhaps that someone who isn't interested in this sort of writing couldn't, not because they're a worse writer, but because it doesn't mean the same thing to them.
Yeah, like that emotional connection. If you don't have the emotional connection to the piece you're working on, then why would you be writing it?
Correct.
And secondly, why would anyone else want to read it if there's no emotional connection there for you?
Right, because the writing and reading experience is an emotional experience. The writing experience is absolutely emotional. I mean, it can be purely intellectual. There's ways to do that. It's not what most people do. No narrative work is purely intellectual. It's impossible. And in fact, I think stories are just a trace of feelings. You know, yeah. The old Doctorow thing is you're not writing about what you're not reporting on the fact that you're standing in the rain. You are trying to render, I'm cobbling this together, I don't know what he actually said, but you're trying to render the experience of standing in the rain. In other words, what does it feel like to stand in the rain? The fact that it's raining is irrelevant. All that matters is what it feels like. And in fact, I think that's true of an entire story. All we care about is not what is happening, but what it feels like for the characters within what is happening. It's 90% of it, and the 10% is actually what's happening.
Yes, I can agree with that.
Yeah, that's my opinion.
You also talk about, what I like about the book that you have is it's not just a companion for you as a writer, it's a companion for you as a human being. In one of the essays, you talk about how suffering stems from one of two thoughts. I don't know if you remember that.
Oh, yeah, it was... I don't have what was. I write these things, then I write the next one, and I write the next one, and I write. You know what's funny about these? I will get back to that. But I was just thinking about this morning. You know how when you write a book, you write it, and now you're filled up with it, and then by the time you start the next book, the part of you that used to be occupied by the first book is now occupied by the new book, and to some degree, you've begun to forget about the old one. Have you ever had that experience?
Well, I write one
every
one
day.
Time where some, go ahead.
I was saying I do this every day, and so I write this essay. I go, "Oh, that's great," or whatever. But then I write the next one, and it fills up the space that the old one. So I kind of forget about them after I've written it. But anyway, go ahead.
Isn't that great? I had an interview one time on the radio. It was after, of course, you know how the publishing business is. So I wrote the book. 10 years later, the book gets picked up by a small press. Three years later, it gets published, you know, that kind of thing. By the time I got on the interview, he asked about one of the minor characters, and I had no idea who he was talking to about, you know.
I do remember this, that suffering stems from the thought I don't know the exact phrasing I use in the essay, but I don't have what I need to be happy, or I don't know what I need to be happy, or I know what I need, but I can't have it. I can't execute it.
Right. I don't know what I want. What's
I
one
don't,
of them.
Right. But I know what
I
want.
I hear people say that all the time. I hear people saying, you know, you ask them, well, what do you really want? Well, I don't know. Well, then you're not going to get it.
Yeah. No, you can't. And that is brutal. You know, that's the thing. People who are writers who are maybe trying to get published and having challenges and so on, and I know that whole story, and it can suck. But I'll tell you, the pain of not knowing what you want to do is, I think slightly worse, possibly, because it's a kind of, and of course it's a misperception. It's never true that you don't know. Within you is something that knows, but it is a kind of death in life, because the thought that I don't know what I want leaves you just sort of a raft, you know, being moved around by the current, and the more you reaffirm that I don't know what I want, I don't know what I want, I don't know what, the more it becomes true. And you know, the one gift I had, I think, as a young person was that I was tuned into the knowing what the feeling of what I want felt like, so I could pursue it in many ways. And it was very hard for me to understand not knowing what you want, because it's just within you. But I think people become detached from it. I think people start looking for approval from the outside a lot, start wanting to fit in with their tribe, whatever it is. And
yeah, I think you're absolutely right. They attach to a tribe and then tend to want to follow it and
course,
do what they do, and they forget themselves.
Of course, it's safety. You know,
you're
surviving on the savannah, and if you're not with the tribe, the tigers will get you, you know. But the fact is, if you want a tribe, the best thing to do, if you must have a tribe, be absolutely authentic to yourself. And they will come to you. Know, and by the way, these essays are a perfect example of that, because I started writing them, and Brian Mercer, a mutual friend of ours, said, "Bill, you got to write these. We need daily content for the magazine, so you got to do it. You got to write a column every day." I said, "I can't do that." He said, "Oh, just write about query letters and, you know, publishing trends and all." I said, "Okay, fine, I'll do that," none of which I have any interest in, really. And so I started doing that, you know, and I was writing along, and after about a month, they began to change and become what they are now. And what I found is the more I let myself write them precisely the way I wanted to, the more they attracted readers, and the more people were pulled towards them, because since I was speaking authentically, the light that they gave off was brighter and clearer, and people were able to see it, and the people who were meant to see it could see it and find it. But if I didn't allow it to shine brightly and in precisely the way it should, they could never have found it. And it was I had no idea if anybody else would be interested, but I just couldn't write them any other way. And the more I allowed myself to write them as I most desired, the more people were drawn to them. It was a great, great lesson in that way.
That is
about
great.
Belonging, you know, creating my own belonging place. I always belong,
yep.
You know.
See, I think that's wonderful. I think that's, like you said, that's one of the things that a companion would be telling you all along.
Yeah, you're already, you're great.
Go ahead.
You know, a good friend just reminds you how great you, your friend loves you.
Yep.
Your friend doesn't need to change and just reminds you, you're great. I love you. You've got it all. Don't worry. That's what a real companion, I think, can do. And if you
have
that companion, it feeds back. And so I don't know the people reading it, but I wrote what I needed to hear. You know, a lot of this is kind of advicey stuff, but it would be like, I need to hear this. So I would write it for myself. And I'd say, God, that was good. I'm glad I said that. I needed to hear that. And then someone else would say, would post a comment somewhere. I needed to hear that. And I thought, God, isn't that magical? I needed to hear it. And I wrote it down. And now it was of use to someone else, too. That's just, you know, it doesn't get any better.
You also talk about writing and dreaming. And so you look at that as a similar thing, like meditating and dreaming
absolutely.
And writing and all that is in the same space.
Don't you think so?
Oh, yeah.
Don't you think? Yeah. I mean, it's really, there was one of these, I wrote one about, we talk about dreams in two ways. There's the dream, which is the sleeping dream. And then it's like, I have a dream of this career as a writer or whatever. And what I love about the sleeping dream is, you know how if people are deprived of dreaming in their REM state, they go mad. That
right.
They might sleep. They might be asleep. But then when they begin to dream, if you wake them up as soon as their eyes begin to move and they are deprived of the ability to dream, they will eventually go mad. And so in that way, the only purpose of sleep really, you could say, is the dream, that it becomes just a vessel for the dreaming. And, you know, when you think about what a human being's life is, it is we live within our own dream, because I'm speaking to you now in a room through a computer, all of which was dreamed by people and then made real. None of this existed but through the dream of the creative imagination of humanity. Everything I'm wearing, everything where I look and where I'm right now was a product of human imagination taking a dream, whether it's a dream of a sweater or a lamp or the internet or a book, and making it real. We live in our dreams made real. We don't see it that way. We think of these America as real, or money as real, or books as real, but they were dreamed by us and then brought forward. We live in our dreams. And so, in fact, I was thinking about the imagination, which is sort of for the waking dream of the mind. And I could not understand what to be alive is without my imagination. I mean, not just using the imagination. I could not imagine, this is strange, kind of circular, I could not imagine minus imagination. I don't even know what that is. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it makes perfect sense, because we don't know what we're even going to say next.
No.
10 minutes ago, we had no idea where this conversation was going to go.
No, we did not.
It's always being created.
It is. We are creative creatures. And that's why I wrote this for authors, you know, it's an author's companion. But the motto of Author Magazine is, you're the author of your own life. And people who aren't writers read the column. And it didn't surprise me, because what I'm writing to sometimes directly is writers. You know, there's some stuff that's specifically for writers. But what I'm really writing to is that creative impulse within you, that desire to share what you think is valuable. And if what you think is valuable is a recipe for cupcakes, The difference between that and a story is not that great. Someone could still say, I don't like this cupcake. Someone could say, who do you think you are creating a great cupcake? You should make a cupcake like blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter whether it's a business or a dance. All of life is creative, and every time you speak, whether it's in a poem or a book or just to a friend, you have to risk putting it out into the world and not knowing what the world will make of it. You have to send it out into the unknown. And so part of me was trying to write to that part within us that is afraid of the unknown that is the rest of the world, that worries if it's safe for this sharing this thing within us that we know must be shared somehow, whether we're ever writers or not.
Right. Well, and safety a lot of times is below average, right? Safety is somewhere stuck in a corner where nothing can get near you, but you can't interact either. You're not a part of the world if you're safe.
All right. Here's I've been quoting this a couple times, but this is my favorite line about this, and it's from Course in Miracles, a great book, not for everybody, but I like it quite a bit. And it's in my defenselessness, my safety lies, and that is absolutely true. It's when you and I keep learning it, and I learn it on deeper and deeper levels every day. But the point of it is, when the more you understand, there is nothing to protect. That is when you begin to feel the safety that was given to you from the moment you were born. What you are protecting cannot be harmed. The thing we believe we are protecting cannot be harmed. And I have to keep remembering that again and again and again. But it is true. It is absolutely true. And if I can, in my writing, I hope to connect people to that part of themselves that they think they need to protect. It doesn't need to be protected. It just doesn't.
Yeah. Talking about the Course in Miracles, my favorite thing is that nothing real can be threatened. Nothing unreal exists.
Yes. Yes.
You know?
Yeah. It's so hard to deal with that concept. It's so sort of, but it's absolutely true. And the only thing true really is love. And I always liken, you know, there's the comparison of love to light and fear to darkness is absolutely true. It's what my column is going to be about tomorrow. Because you know, light simply exists, and darkness is simply that which is simply light obscured.
Right.
Darkness itself doesn't exist. It is simply some thought or physical object that has blocked the light, but the light itself can't cease to exist simply because something is in front of it. And so, too, with the love that's inside of us, just because you think a fearful thought and block that light that is love, that is you, doesn't mean it ceases to exist.
Right. The clouds don't stop the sun from shining.
That's right. Exactly. Yes. To say it more succinctly, exactly.
Yeah.
Precisely.
So before we end, if writing has taught me anything, it has taught me blank.
It has taught me I have free will. It has taught me, it's taught me so many things, but it's for sure taught me that I have free will. That just as that page is blank and I have to choose to fill it, so my life is blank, and I have to choose to fill it. And my job is to take responsibility for those choices. And within that responsibility lies my creative happiness. That's what has taught me. Well, Terry, what good
that
timing. Thank you so much. We could have talked for another half hour, but that's all we got. Thanks for doing this. I'm taking the reins back. You are a fantastic host.
Hey, one more thing. We have to do this again.
We will. You want to do it again?
I think it's really perfect because, you know, this is a subject that's a lot longer than the time you had here.
That's it. This is good. Well, what do you think, people? Should we? We should. Hey, before I let them go, everybody, 2 weeks. I won't be here next week. In 2 weeks, Natalie Goldberg, she of Writing Down the Bones, will be here with me. Oh, that's going to be good. Until I'm just going to leave Terry on while we say goodbye. Until then, do what you love. You want to pick up a copy of Write Within Yourself, Author's Companion. It's all over the internet. It's going to be in bookstores soon. Oh, boy, it's been a lot of fun. Terry, thanks again, buddy.
Oh, thank you. This was really great. Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome.